Good morning, everyone. It's wonderful to see everyone. Baruch Hashem, I hope everyone had a wonderful summer. It feels like a very long time since we've learned last. And although the class that I'm normally privileged to give throughout the year is a class on Sefer Tehillim, for the next 2 weeks we're going to focus on something a little bit different, themes of the Yamim Noraim. And specifically, over the course of this week, what's my title for today? Can I just see this for a second? I had to give Mrs. Shulman the titles like 2 months ago. I told Mrs. Shulman, I'm lucky if I know what I'm doing tomorrow. But okay, so our title today is Change Really Possible, Harnessing the Power of the Amim Tovim. So is change really possible? Yes. So now that we got that out of the way, and Meretz Hashem, we're going to focus on something dramatically different today. And I actually want to draw your attention, thank you. I want to draw your attention to what I think is a fascinating symbolic ritual and rite that we engage in year in and year out. I often find that one of the most amazing things about our Judaism is that there are so many things that we do on a regular basis that we take for granted, so many things that we know that are part and parcel of our litany of Judaic rituals and rites, but sometimes, because we're used to certain things, we lose out a little bit on the deeper meaning and deeper symbolism. So take a look at number one on your sheet. So there's an amazing Gemara Maseches Krisos. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Ami, Haiman Deboi Leida, Imashcha Shasa Ilo, if you want to know if you're going to live out the year or not. This person wants to know, am I going to live out the year or not? Maisi Shraga Bahalin Asar Yomid Debein Rashasa Liyomid Dikipuri. Take a candle during the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Aser Simei Tshuva. Take a candle. V'nitli Babesa Delo Nashev Zeka. And go ahead and put it in a home, put it in a room where there is not a strong wind. Imashich Nuhurei, if the candle remains lit, then Neda Demasik Shasya. Then know that you're going to live out the year. Okay, the Gemara goes on. Uman diboi naavid iski. A person wants to engage in a particular business venture. Uboi dineida imatzlich iski olo. And I want to know, am I going to be successful in the business venture or not? What should I do? Nirbi tarnegola. Get yourself a chicken. Ishamin bishaper neida dematzlich. If the chicken puts on good weight and goes out and fattens up, then that's a sign that you will be successful in your business venture. And the Gemara gives a couple of other examples. Let's skip down to the end of the Gemara. Amar Abayi, Sabayi says, Hashta da'amrit simna milsahi. Now that we've established, now how would you translate that phrase, simna milsahi? Now that we know that omens are significant, simon means a sign or an omen. Now that I know that omens are significant, meaning what Abai is saying is like this. So what you're telling me apparently is if I want to know if I live out the year, if the candle remains lit, that shows I'm going to live out the year. Am I going to be successful in the business venture? If the chicken fattens up, then that's a sign that I'm going to be successful. Now that you've told me that omens are meaningful, Abaye says, Yehe rogil inish lemechol reish shasa, a person should eat the following foods at the beginning of the year. A person should eat kra, a gourd, rubya are carrots, karsi, leeks or cabbage, silka, beets, tamri, dates. So of course, again, we're familiar with this Gemara. Why? Because the truth is, I'm actually meant to include this on your sheet. I apologize that I didn't. But if you open up any art school machzer, or art school sitter for that matter, there's a whole thing that we do on the first night, different customs. Some do it only on the first night of Rosh Hashanah. Some do it on both nights of Rosh Hashanah, of simna milsa. Simanim, it depends where you're coming from. Good, either way, it's the same language. Hey, we do significant omens. Significant omens, we take these foods, and by the way, the foods that we use to this very day, these are the foods mentioned in the Gemara. Again, we'll see the list has grown throughout the ages, but our entire practice on the first night of Rosh Hashanah is based on this Gemara in Maseches Krisos. Rabbi says, now that you've told me that omens are significant, so a person should take these types of foods. We'll discuss why these foods, and they eat them on the first night of Rosh Hashanah. So Rashi HaKadosh points out, he says in number two, why these foods? Why davka these foods? So Rashi says, V'hani di'ika de'gadli moher, v'ika de'maski. Because all of the foods in this category satisfy one of two criteria. Either they grow quickly, or they're sweet. Either way, these foods represent vitality, success,
and sweetness. Some of them sweetness because of their taste, some of them vitality because of the pace in which they grow, and therefore again we want to start the new year with a series of good omens. And in fact, if you skip for a moment to the Abudraham, so the Abudraham writes, So the Abudraham says, why these foods? So you see, according to Rashi, these foods were chosen by Abaye or by the Gemara, because again, either some of them are sweet, or because they grow at a fast pace. Either way, it represents blessing, vitality, sweetness. The Abudraham says something a little bit different. The Abudraham says that each of these foods, their names, could be manipulated into a little bit of a play on words. So for example, he says, I'll quote to you now, just taking from the Machzor, you don't have this in your sheets, but for example, so we go ahead, the Gemara says that we should take Rubio. Why Rubio? Because remember, what do we say when we lift up the carrots on the first night of Rosh Hashanah? Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bedvaro. Rebecca, thank you. So the Gemara says, so we say the Yiratzon, Yiratzon Melfanach Hashem Elokeinu Velokei Avoseinu Sheyirbu Zuchuyoseinu. It should be your will, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that our merits will increase. That's a play on words. The Aramaic word for carrots is rubia. So rubia, yirbu, our merits should increase. We go ahead and we take what the Gemara called the karsi, the leeks or the cabbage, and what do we say? Our enemies should be cut off. Again, a play on words. Aramaic for leeks and cabbage is karsi. Karis is lashon of cut off. And therefore, each of the foods that the Gemara brings down, that Abaye brings down, each of their names has a different kind of meaning. So we take the name. So according to the Abudraham, the foods themselves aren't so significant. What we're more interested in is what? Their names, right? That's the name. So it doesn't really matter if it was this or it was that. We're looking for the names that could be manipulated and used in some type of yihiratzon. That's a blessing, that's a supplication, that's an anticipatory desire for a good world, for a good year. If you look at number three, going a little bit out of order. So of course, what's interesting to note, which is what's missing from this list of the Gemara? Apples, right? So in fact, again, but that's not such a question anymore, because look at number three, the Torah writes, Umize rabu hamin hagim. Now, after Abaye said this, that simna milsa, that omens are significant, we understand that Abaye is saying that on the night of Rosh Hashanah, you should use foods that have some type of significant omen attached to it. So he says, "Umizeh rabu haminhagim kol makom umakom lefi minhago." Every different place in accordance with their custom. By the way, it's not just accordance with their custom. It's also in accordance with what? With what's available. So again, this is not if this was a historical shiur, we could trace why it is that certain fruits have become so predominant on Rosh Hashanah in certain communities. It's not complicated. It's all based on what was available. So he says, for example, Kimo ba'ashkenaz. Ashkenaz doesn't just mean Germany. Ashkenaz means Europe, Eastern Europe. Sheregilin le'echol b'tchilas ha'su'uda tapuach mosok bidvash. So again, in the German communities, Eastern European communities, they used apples. Why do they use apples? Well, the truth is, what's interesting is they don't have dates, right? They have, they import it, but dates are not indigenous in Europe. So what's a good sweet fruit that was readily available throughout the European communities was apples. So he says in Ashkenaz they use apples, dvash. Now the honey we'll get to in a little bit. Chilomar tischade shalenu shana tova umesuka ubi provincia and in France. No again lahavi ala shulchan kol mini chidush vaochlin rosh keves. Lomar nihia l'rosh velo lezanov. And some used to eat the head of a sheep, some eat the head of a fish. And again, symbolic, we should be a head and not a tail. Varam me Rotenberg, the maram of Rotenberg, hayarogi lecho rosh ayil zacher, zechala elo shal yitzchak. The maram of Rotenberg used to eat the head of a male ram, I guess it rams are male, a ram, in order to remember the binding of Isaac, Akedas Yitzchak, where after HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram, don't offer up the child, Avram Avinu offers up the ram instead. So here you see the concept of Simna Milsa. Omens are significant, comes in the Gemara Maseches Krislos, Abaye adapts it, and again we have it contemporarily. And in fact, number five, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Yehei Adam Ragi Lecha B'Rosh Hashanah, a person should eat on Rosh Hashanah, Rubya, Dahinu Talsin, Karasi, Silka, Tamri, Kra, Ukishiyocha, Rubya, Yomer, Yiratzon, Shibuz. So again, the Shulchan Aruch quotes all of these foods that Abaye quoted, and the Shulchan Aruch also quotes the corresponding Yehiratzons. So, this always intrigued me, and I'll tell you why it always intrigued me. Judaism is not a hocus-pocus religion. It's not a hocus-pocus religion. Right? Meaning, I have bad news. Red strings are not going to save you from anything. I know, right? It's not. It's fine. I don't think it hurts. But they're not going to save you or give you. We don't believe in things like that. We're a very rational, spiritual, emotional religion. But again, there's very little hocus-pocus involved in our religion. So this notion that here we stand on the days of judgment. We stand on the days of judgment. And how are we starting? See, I would have thought that if you're going to begin the days of judgment, how do you begin? You get home from shul on first night of Rosh Hashanah. What should you do the first thing?
You eat.
I eat. Okay, that's an excellent Jewish answer. Right? Good. Davin, make a bracha, learn a little bit. Meaning, remember, understand what is being decided. Rosh Hashanah ultimately is the day of judgment. V'chal ba'e olam ovrim lefan of kibnei maron. Each of us come before our Kodesh Baruch Hu one by one, and the Ribono Shel Olam judges us. And the Ribono Shel Olam decides what the coming year is going to have in store for us. It's literally, again, there's no hyperbole when life and death is being decided on these very days. You know, the Arizal says, beautiful, beautiful Arizal. He says that if you cry on Rosh Hashanah, if you shed tears on Rosh Hashanah, the Arizal says that means that your neshama is being judged at that moment. If you shed tears, your neshama is being judged on that very moment. That's what's happening over here. And I'm dipping apples in honey? I'm dipping apples in honey? And this is like the big discussion, right? This one wants a lot of honey. This one wants a little bit of honey. This one doesn't like honey. The apples turned brown already because you're home from shul late. And this is what everybody's involved with on the Yom HaDin. Like, this is how I'm opening up Rosh Hashanah. Now, granted, Rosh Hashanah is a heavy day, but yet it's also a Simcha Dik day. We'll talk about that more next week. But it always intrigued me that the first thing we're doing on the days of judgment is the simanim. And you know, really, if you go through the whole order, there's a lot of simanim. There's a lot of them. Right? And it takes a significant amount of time, especially, again, if you don't just, you know, chop it up, but you go ahead and you try to understand what it is that the symbolism is. Each of those yihiratzos is an anticipatory wish for the coming year. But why start Rosh Hashanah like this? So please understand that whenever we have a Judaic practice like this, Chazal, everything we have in our religion oozes with meaning. Everything we have in our Yiddishkeit has such profound relevance and profound meaning. So therefore, this must be something more than just a nice little symbol. There must be a deeper message. That's what we're going to try to analyze today. So in our first approach, understand that this Gemara actually poses a significant problem. Because remember how the Gemara began. So the Gemara said that if you want to know if you're going to live out the year, what should you do? Take a candle, right? And what? Light it during the days between Hashanah and Yom Kippur in a room and there's not a lot of wind. And if the candle remains lit, that shows you're going to live out the year. And you want to be successful in business, take the chicken. If it fattens up, remember, this is a problem. What's the problem? Look at number six. The Torah says, we don't have chickens. Right. That is a problem. That is true. That is true. I was talking more like on a theological level. But yes, on a practical level, you are correct. So take a look at number six. So the Torah says, Lo sochlu al adam, which again is a straightforward obligation. We're not permitted to eat blood. Lo sinachashu velo se'onenu. We do not go ahead and engage in omens or literally lucky hours. What does this mean? Look at the Gemara number seven. So the Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin says, Menachesh, Zeha omer pito naflo mipiv, maklo naflo miyado. So the Gemara apparently quotes some ancient superstitions, that if a person was eating and his bread fell out of his mouth, it was a bad sign. Or his staff fell out of his hand, it was a bad sign. Or a raven seems to call out to him, it's a bad sign. Or a deer stops in front of you on the road, it's a bad sign. Or again, well, that is actually a bad sign. That's not a bad sign. That's just dangerous. Nachash mi'yemino v'shom mi'smolo. If there's a snake on my left and a fox on my right. I'm sorry, just the opposite. A snake on my right, a fox on my left. Oh, so the Gemara just goes through all of these things. The Gemara says, we don't believe in these things. You know, even, remember, black cats or walking under ladders or all these things, they're not part of our religion. We don't believe in superstitions. We don't believe in these types of omens. So if we don't believe in these types of omens, we've got a big problem. Because the Gemara in number one spoke all about omens. So how is what the Gemara is suggesting, and by extension, what Abaye is suggesting for Rosh Hashanah, how is this not in violation of a biblical prohibition of what we call lo senachashu velo seonenu, not to engage in superstitious omens? So I want to share with you something amazing. Take a look at number nine, the Marsha. I included a lot more information on this than what we're going to do today, but you'll look at it on your own. So the Marsha, who's one of the commentaries, and you can see his biography, I put a little bit of his biography, Rav Shmuel Eliezer ben Rav Yehuda Halevi Idels. I mentioned a number of times the Marsha married into a very prominent and wealthy family who supported him as a young man in his learning. The Marsha's father-in-law passed away. And when his father-in-law passed away, he was going to take on the family's business. His mother-in-law saw this such incredible potential in her son-in-law that she told him to please continue his studies, develop himself into a Torah scholar, and she took on the financial responsibility for the family. He had such incredible gratitude towards her that he took her last name. Idels is her last name, his wife's family's name, not his. Incredible, incredible thing. So the Marsha says the following. Look at 9 Aleph. Man deboy lemeidei masek shasi. Yesh le daktik, bedivri ha-ma'amar hazeh me'ikara, amar hay man deboy lemeidei masek shasi ilo. Uba'asiya, lo ka'amar rak chaluka harishona dahainu imashek nur neida demasek shasa. Let me read something to this outside. The Marsha asks a technical question on the Gemara. Remember, let's go back for one moment to number one. So remember, the Gemara begins with the statement of Rav Ami. And Rav Ami said, if someone wants to know if they're going to live out the year or not, so what should you do? You should take, again, one more time, you should take a candle between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, take it into a room where there's not a strong wind, and what does the Gemara say? Imashich nahore neida demasik shasya. If the candle remains lit, then that shows that what? You're going to live out the year. That's where the statement ends. The Marsha says there's something missing. What's missing? What about the second part of the statement? That if the candle goes out, it means you're not going to live. The Marsha says it's interesting because the Gemara keeps doing that over and over and over. If I want to know if I'm going to be successful in a business endeavor, so I take my chicken. If it fattens up, that shows that I'm going to be successful. What's missing from the Gemara? If the chicken loses weight, then I'm going to be unsuccessful in business. So the Marsha says, why does the Gemara only give the positive side of the omen and not the negative? So that's question number one. Look at paragraph Beis. The Marsha then says, "V'yesh lahashiv bazeh mishum delich ora b'chol zeh yesh mishum lo senachashu." Then the Marsha asks our question, which is, how is any of this permitted altogether? After all, at the end of the day, is this not divination? Is this not putting too much emphasis on omens, which the Torah itself tells us that we are not permitted to do? So first the Marsha asks a technical question on the Gemara. Why doesn't the Gemara include both the positive as well as, or I should say the negative, as well as the positive potential outcomes of the omen? Why only the positive? And then question number two, which is a more global question, how is this whole practice permitted altogether? And the Marsha says something absolutely amazing. He says, look at paragraph Gimel. Now there are many answers given to this, says the Marsha. I'm going to add my answer as well. Ki hatov hu ba mimenu yisparach baruch hu. Because that which is good comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Aval hara eni yor min hashamayim. Evil or negative things do not come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Aval avono shel adam hu mesalek midas tuvaso yisbarach baruch hu me'atzmo. We're going to leave that for later. Look at paragraph Dal for just a moment. Ulezeh, look at this underlined line. Ulezeh hatov haba mimenu yisbarach baruch hu behechlet. Says the Marsha something absolutely amazing. The natural order of the world is good. The natural order of life is good. The default in existence is that things go well, life is good, bracha is showered upon us. That is the default of life. And therefore, says the Maharsha, something absolutely amazing. Do you know why this is not lo senachashu? Why isn't this divination? Because look what the Gemara says. I want to know if I'm going to live out the year. So what does the Gemara say? Light the candle. And the Gemara says, if it remains lit, then I'm going to live out the year. Or if the chicken fattens up, I'm going to be successful. Why is that not divination? Because if the omen goes well, it is just a confirmation of the natural order of the world, which is good. It is simply confirming that which I already believe in my heart, which is in life, things work out. In life, things go well. In this world, there is so much good, there is so much bracha, there is so much shalom. That's why the Gemara does not include the negative possibility. Because what if the candle does go out? Does that mean the person is not going to live? Says the Maharsha. No, doesn't mean that at all. It can mean that a person maybe has to do some tshuva, a person has to work on some things, but there is no such thing, says the Maharsha, as a set in stone negative gezerah, as a set in stone negative decree. If the chicken loses weight instead of gaining weight, does that mean I'm going to be unsuccessful? No, it doesn't mean that. So if the omen confirms the natural default of existence, then fine, you could believe it. And that's not divination, because I'm not subscribing to any superstitions. I'm just confirming the fact that the world is good, that life is good, that the Ribono Shel Olam is good. And if it doesn't work out the way that I wanted it, so no, we'll just leave that as it is. Why is this important? I'm just going to take all questions later if that's okay. Why is this important for us? Why is this important for us? Because what the Maharsha says is, do you know why we start Rosh Hashanah night with these simanim? Do you know why we're starting out with our apples and the honey and the carrots and the beets and the leeks and everything else? Because we are reinforcing to ourselves that the default of life is good. We are reinforcing for ourselves that the coming year is going to be sweet, that the coming year is going to be good. You see, Chazal understood that in life there are two different types of people. Or maybe there are more than two different types of people. But there are many people who walk around through life waiting for the other shoe to drop. What's going to go wrong next? And sometimes people have good reason for having that mindset, because a lot of things have simply not gone according to plan for them in life. But here is one thing that is clear. If I am a waiting for the other shoe to drop kind of person, one thing is almost inevitable, which is the other shoe will drop. Because when you walk around with a negative mindset, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you believe things never go according to plan, if you believe things never work out, if you believe life is terrible and you are only the recipient of everything that which is negative, then the truth is God could shower blessing upon blessing after blessing on you and you'll never be able to see it. Therefore comes along Abaye and says, now that we've said omens are significant, why are omens significant? Because omens remind us that we have to have a positive perspective on life. We have to have a positive perspective on ourselves. We have to have a positive perspective on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, so many times in life, things don't go our way. And people, the first thing they ask themselves is, why is God punishing me? Understand, when you ask that question, that presupposes a level of knowledge which we don't have access to, which presupposes that I know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu does things, and we don't know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu does things. And just because something is painful doesn't automatically mean that it's a punishment. And just because something hurts doesn't automatically mean that I've done something wrong. I have to maintain a positive disposition about life. So if I'm standing in the first few moments of 5777. You know, Chazal said, you know what's even more important than davening? You know what's even more important than making a bracha or than learning a little extra Torah to tilt the scales? The most important thing is cultivating a positive perspective on life. I have to enter into the new year with the confidence that this year is going to be sweet, that this year is going to be beautiful, that this year is going to be wonderful, that there is going to be so much bracha. But I want to give you the caveat. It's true, Simna Milsa, these omens, help to cement positive expectations from the new year. But just because the year is going to be sweet doesn't mean that the year is going to be easy. You know, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says, and you'll notice, by the way, honey doesn't really appear anywhere in the Gemara or anywhere else. The first time we actually see honey is what I quoted to you over here from the Marsha, number 9. And from the tour in number 3, where in the European communities they were using honey. And it's possible also because maybe the apple is also not as sweet as the date, as the other food, maybe to accentuate the sweetness. The Baal Shem Tov says something amazing. Do you know why we use honey in Rosh Hashanah, says the Baal Shem Tov? Because the honey comes from bees. Now, here's what's interesting, another geographic distinction. When you're in the Middle East, in Eretz Yisrael, and you talk about honey, right? Eres zavas chalav u'divash. Divash is always what? Date honey. Remember, again, in the European communities, they were not using date honey, they were using bee honey. So the Baal Shem Tov says, do you know why we use honey? Because what's so amazing about the honey? Honey comes from the bee. Honey comes from the bee. And the lesson is that sometimes the sweetest things in life could come from those very things that sting so badly. That sometimes the honey comes from that sting, from that very item that could do so much damage, from that very item that could hurt so much. You could produce such magnificent sweet, and so sweet, by the way, that you can't even eat it by itself. So sweet that it overwhelms the taste buds. So sweet that you have to blunt its sweetness with other things. And yet it comes from that very thing that can inflict so much pain, so much damage. So say Chazal to us, on the first night of Rosh Hashanah, we go ahead and we take our apples and our honeys and everything else to reinforce within ourselves that this year is going to be beautiful and sweet. I know it's going to be filled with challenges. And yes, there will be stings. There'll be personal stings. There'll be national stings, because that is the nature of the human condition. There is no, we've spoken about this so many times throughout our Tehillim Shiurim, there is no such thing as life without struggle. As Ramchal Rav Moshe Chaim Lotzato brings down in his introduction to Mesilas Yesharim, he says, life is a milchama. Life is a war. Life is a battle. And every single day, there is another battle to be waged. So if I think for a moment that I'm going to eat apples and honey, and suddenly again it's going to be smooth sailing for the year, I'm going to be terribly disappointed. But if I accept the fact that life is filled with, that there's so much bracha, the year is going to be filled with beautiful things, but those beautiful things may come from challenges. Those beautiful things may come from adversity. Those beautiful things may come from the stings of existence. I set myself up with a positive perspective to be able to embrace the new year, because Chazal understood something very important. If you want to be successful in anything in life, success in life begins not with actions, but with perspective. If I enter into the new year saying to myself, this year is going to be great. I don't know how, I don't know when, I don't know what, I don't know where, but I know that this year is going to be filled with bracha, this year is going to be sweet, this year is going to be beautiful, then I begin the process of making that a reality. And it's interesting, I'll tell you just something, just on this same, I'll tell you this, I might say this again on Shabbos, so if you're in my shul on Shabbos, so pretend like you didn't hear it. But I just saw yesterday just a beautiful, beautiful mashal from the Dibna Magid. So the Dibna Magid says, he says that there was once a very poor man who won a lot of money, an incredible, incredible, vast fortune. And see, he went ahead, and the first thing he wanted to do is he wanted to build himself a really beautiful house. See, he lived his whole life in a shack. He wanted to build a beautiful house. And so he hired a whole bunch of artisans and craftsmen, and he told them, I want you to make my home out of the finest stones. And fine. So they order in all of the marble and the copper and the this and that. And the marble comes in blocks. And as it comes in, the artisans, what do? The builders, they begin to chop up the marble, because you can't build with a block of marble. You have to chop it up into smaller pieces. And the pauper turned rich man sees this, and he starts yelling at them. He said, what are you doing to my marble? What are you doing? So what are you talking about? We have to build. And he starts yelling, no, you're robbing from me, you're stealing from me. So the Dibna Magid said, you know, sometimes we don't realize that the only way to get the bracha in life is to get a little bit of breakage. Sometimes the bracha, the building, could only come out if you take the whole thing and you break it up a little bit. Because the whole thing, it's nice, it's beautiful, but that whole slab of marble that's sitting in the front yard of the construction project, I can't do anything with it. It looks beautiful. It might be inherently valuable, but I can't build with it. Sometimes the breakage in life occurs because that's the only way to build. Sometimes the breakage in life occurs because that's the only way to erect a magnificent edifice. That's what we do on the first night of Rosh Hashanah. Ribono shel Olam, I am ready. I am ready to enter into this year. I am going to grab 5777 by the horns, and I'm going to make something magnificent from this year. And I believe you're going to be my partner. And I believe you're going to shower bracha upon me. And I believe that everything that's going to happen to me over the course of this year is going to be latova, is going to be for good. And even if it stings, and even if it breaks me a little bit, I know deep down, simna milsa, that all of these things are sweet, and all of these things are good. That's how we start the new year. But we have to take this one step further. Take a look at number 10. So the Chai Adam writes something amazing. The Chai Adam writes, "Bevo'o lebeiso, yeshulchan aruch v'neiros dolkim kemo shar yomtov." When you come into your home, this is on the first night of Rosh Hashanah, person should walk in, the table should be set, the candles should be lit, the kaddish yimei kiddish, the chayvan should tchilas hashanah, and since this is the beginning of the year, noagin la'asos l'simen tov le'echol dvarim harom zim lozeh. And because this is the beginning of the year. So the Chai Adam quotes what we just quoted before. We do certain things as a positive omen. And we eat certain things that are a remez, that are a hint to the positivity, to the sweetness we hope will come from the coming year. Now here's what's amazing. So far, nothing new that we haven't seen before. But look at his parentheses in number 10. V'atam lozeh. Says the Chai Adam, do you want to know the reason we do this? Ayin b'ramban, tchilas lech lecha. So the Chai Adam says, the reason for this practice of eating these symbolic omen items is found in a Ramban in Bereshis. What's the Ramban in Bereshis? Take a look at number 11. The Ramban is on this pasuk. Vayavor Avram be'eretz ba'aretz ad makom shchem ad elon more v'aknani az ba'aretz. You know, when Avram Avinu comes to Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Kinan, so the Ribbono Shel Olam commands him, kum his haleich la'arkao l'rechbo. You have to walk up and down the length and width of the land. Length and breadth of the land. I want you to walk across the entire land. And the obvious question is, why? Why does he have to walk back and forth on the land? Meaning, what exactly is the point of that? So the Ramban says something amazing. The Ramban says, he says, Vayavra Avram, paragraph Aleph, 12 Aleph, Omer lecha, klal tovin osa v'chala parasha osa baos, b'inyan Avram Yitzhak v'yakov, v'hu inyan godol hiskiru rabasinu v'derech kitzar, v'amru, ko mashi iro le'avos simu labonim. So remember again, this is the famous Ramban, where the Ramban says that the entire book of Genesis can be summed up with one phrase, ma'ase avos simu labonim. What happened to the forefathers is a foreshadow for what will happen to their children. That if we look throughout the book of Bereshis, everything that happened to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, somehow happened to us as a people throughout the generations. Not the generations. So it's a foreshadow. Fine, beautiful idea. But look in paragraph base. He says, V'da, ki kol gzeiras irin kasher teitz mikoach gzeira al demyon, tia ha gzeira miskayemes al kolpanin. The Ramban says something amazing. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises something, as soon as that promise takes some physical form, the promise cannot be reversed. Listen to this. Look at, skip to now the larger lines at the end of the base. Says the Ramban something absolutely amazing, which is, Avram Avinu reaches Canaan. And remember, even before he got to Canaan, what did God tell him? What did God tell him? Go. That is true. Right? Go. And what else after go? Go to the land. What's going to happen with this land? It's yours. It's yours. It's yours. And it's going to be for your children. So send it on band. Sometimes, here's only one problem. Only one little minute detail. Which is, Haknani az ba'aretz. It's not Avram's. Right? The greatest proof that it wasn't Avram's was that when Sarai Imenu passes away, Avram Avinu in his time of grief has to, what he has to handle? Right? He has to negotiate. He has to bargain for a piece of land. Can you imagine that indignation? I have to buy that which is already mine. I have to negotiate with Ephron Achiti to purchase that which God already granted me title to. So it's not his. What does it mean? It's yours. So the Ramban says something amazing. The Ramban says, Avram Avinu, I've promised it for you, but here's what I need you to do. Promises are great, But the moment you act on that promise, the moment you do something, that solidifies the promise. So I'm going to ask you to walk the length and breadth of the land. Because when you walk the land, you know that in halacha, one of the ways in which you acquire real property, land, is chazaka, is a demonstration of ownership. And one of the ways in which someone demonstrates ownership is they walk around the borders of the property. So Avram, I've given you a promise, but I want you to cement the promise through definitive action. So now let's take this back. Says the Chai Adam, the reason we go ahead and we do this simonim on the night of Rosh Hashanah is why? Is why? He says, based on this Ramban. So the Chai Adam is saying something amazing. If we build on the previous Marsha, it's not just enough to go ahead and believe that the coming year is going to be sweet. It's not just enough to believe it. And it's not just enough to have positive perspective. I need to engage in concrete action. Or in other words, that if I want a sweet new year, I have to develop one simple thing, and it's called a plan. What is my plan for the coming year? What actions am I taking? What am I doing? What am I working on? How am I going to grow? The Chai Adam says positive perspective is beautiful. And believing that the coming year is going to be sweet and believing that it's going to be wonderful, that's great. But here's the only problem. Believing in things doesn't make them happen. You know what makes things happen? Decisive and determined life activity. When you do, when you roll up your sleeves, when you act, when you perform, when you engage in things, that's what makes things happen. And therefore says the Chai Adam something amazing. The Chai Adam says that when I come home from shul and I'm already in my positive perspective mode, that the coming year is going to be beautiful and wonderful, the Chai Adam says that when I dip my apple into honey, that's my first concrete action for the new year. Ribonu shel olam. I don't just believe the year is going to be sweet. I'm demonstrating it through concrete dynamic activity. You'll say, I'm not so dynamic dipping an apple into honey. You know what? It's a start. It's a start. So says the Chai Adam again, the simonim are not just perspective, but the simonim ultimately again represent the first action. The first way in which I show that if I want bracha in this year, I have to ask myself, what am I tangibly doing to make it happen? And this is so important, understanding our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribono Shel Olam, I want to be clear on something. The Ribono Shel Olam is our co-pilot. He's not the pilot. He's the co-pilot. So what that means is I have to decide what direction I'm going. I have to decide what I'm doing, and then once I, the pilot, decide what I'm doing, then it's the job of the co-pilot, it's the job of the navigator, to make sure that I reach that destination. Chazal have a term for this. They call it, Bederech Sha'adam Rotse Leilech Molichin Oso. When I choose a path, it's then God that helps me along that path, but God doesn't choose the path for me. And no matter how much you daven, the Ribono Shel Olam is not going to push you on any particular path. I choose the path. And when I choose the path, the Ribono Shel Olam then gives me the resources, if I'm really determined and I'm really committed, to ultimately reach my destination. Says the Chai Adam, in order to go ahead and see a real blessing in life, you have to construct a reality that is going to allow blessing to occur. It's not enough to envision a sweet future. A person has to work actively to make it happen. I think this is very important. Because let's be honest, right? We're amongst friends here. So what often, usually it's the same dynamic that plays out for most of us over the course of the year, right? Chodesh Elul comes, what occurs? All right. Mamish, everybody, tshuva, okay, I gotta get things in order. I can't believe I didn't do these things from last year already. Right? And it builds up, builds up, builds up, builds up. Rosh Hashanah comes to Kiyah Shofar, my neshama's on fire. Aser Yisrael, tshuva, Yom Kippur, incredible ni'ilah. And then?
Nothing.
Right? Not nothing. Not nothing. That's a little too dramatic. But pretty much, Sukkot comes. You know, the truth is, there's an incredible sense of relief when the judgment is behind us. Even though it's not really behind us, right? Because, you know, it doesn't close until Hoshana Rabbah. But I don't really like to think about that until the third day of Chol HaMoed. Then I'll begin to think about Hoshana Rabbah again. And then the good news is, even Hoshana Rabbah, the Sfarim bring down that the gates of Tshuva aren't really closed until Chanukah. You know, and then again, there are other Sfarim that bring down that Tu Bishvat is really Yom HaDin as well. Then I'm sure you could find someone who's going to say it's almost Purim. Then once it's Purim, it's almost Pesach. And once it's Pesach, it's almost Elul already. So really what ends up happening very often is we often feel, you know, I won't speak for anyone else, but I know for me, I often wonder why it is that I find myself struggling with the same things year in and year out. Why? Like, why is it that these shouldn't be complicated things to be able to overcome? These shouldn't be complicated problems to devise a solution. Because what often happens in Chodesh Elul? What often happens is one word, Kabbalos. Right? Everyone, what am I going to take on? What am I going to take on? I'm going to take on Tehillim. I'm going to take on this. I'm going to do Tzedakah. I'm going to do Ches. I'm going to do Kabbalah, and taking things on is beautiful. But taking things on does not advance your life. What advances my life is a plan. What I need to do during Chodesh Elul, and even during Yomim Noraim, is to ask myself, where am I now? And where do I want to get to? And how do I traverse that distance between the start line and the finish line? What's the plan? How do I advance myself? And it could be that five kapitlach of Tehillim is nice, but that's not going to get me where I need to get to. And it could be that going ahead and giving someone a ride is nice, always do that, but that's not the thing I have to work on. Those are all wonderful things. But the problem is sometimes we lose the trees from the forest. And we're so focused on planting additional trees, a little more chasid, a little more tzedakah, a little more learning, which is all beautiful, that we forget about the plan. So says the Chai Adam, when we come home from shul on the first night of Rosh Hashanah, I come home and I'm filled. And a Jew, I want to be clear, Rosh Hashanah is not a morbid day. Rosh Hashanah is a yom of simcha. So many people have a skewed view of Rosh Hashanah of Yom Kippur that you're supposed to be tzibrachan and you're supposed to be broken and crying. And the more miserable you look, that means the firmer you are. And it's not true. It's not true. We should be besimcha because the Kaddish Baruch Hu loves us. Because the Kaddish Baruch Hu wants us to be more successful than we want to be successful. But you know what? What's the greatest frustration we have often with our children? The greatest frustration that parents often experience is not when my kids don't listen. So my children fail to utilize their potential. When I see that my child is capable of so much and they're just not tapping into it, that is the greatest source of parental angst. So if I get angst over that from my children, can we only imagine how HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels from us when he sees another year go by? Why hasn't he tapped into the potential? So many abilities, so many kohos, and yet just skimming the surface. It's a frustration on the part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not anger. It's not a desire to punish. It's a frustration. Why isn't he utilizing, why isn't she utilizing all of the beautiful gifts that I have given them? And therefore, says the Chai Adam, when I come home from shul on Rosh Hashanah night, yes, the first step is positive perspective. I have to believe that the year is going to be beautiful. The year is going to be filled with bracha, because if you have a positive perspective, life looks a lot nicer. The world looks a lot nicer and you become a better person. But positive perspective only gets you so far. At some point in time, positive perspective has to yield dynamic life activity. If I want to have a good year, I need to set up for myself the proper framework that could allow that to happen. I need my plan. And the first little action that I'm doing to show that I'm not just going to hope for good things, but I'm going to do my best to make good things happen, is my little apple in the honey. It's true. It's a small action. It's a token action. But it's an action. It's the way like Avraham Avinu walked up and down the land in order that the divine blessing would be irreversible. So I want to create an irreversibility of the goodness and the sweetness of this year. And the way I do that is by engaging in good dynamic activity. The little apple, the little carrot, the little leek, the gourd, the fish head, the ram's head, whatever it is that you use. Those little things represent the first action that allows for the goodness that I believe is going to mark this coming year to be an irreversible bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you take a look, interestingly enough, these two dynamics are really alluded to in the Gemara. If you look at number 13 for just a moment, so I quoted to you in number 1 from the Gemara in Meseches Krisus. There is another Gemara in Meseches Horios, in number 13, two different tractates of the Talmud. So number 1 was Krisos, this is Horios, and the Gemaras are virtually the same. They say pretty much the same exact thing, with one interesting distinction. If you go back to number 1 for just a moment, so the Gemara said, Amar Abaye, the bolded lines on the bottom of number one. Amar Abaye, Hashta da Amrit Simna Milsihi, Yehi Rogil Inish Lemechol Reish Shasa Krav Rubio. Because now that we've said that omens are significant, therefore Abaye said that what? A person should eat these significant foods. Look at number 13 for just a moment and I'll show you something amazing. Look at the last two lines. Amar Abaye, Hashta da Amrit Simna Milsihi, Liolam Yehi Rogil Lemechze Bereish Shasa. Lemechze means to look at. It's interesting. So the Gemara number one says that you should eat the simanim. The Gemara number two says that you should just look at the simanim. So first of all, just as an interesting aside, if you look at number 15, in the Sefer Kitzayamata, he writes, Vagon marifik kasav sham shegir sasa aruchu lemechze ve'imkein afilu ledidon denoagin la'ochlo. So first of all, interesting, just on a halachic perspective, there seems to be an idea, or a hashkafic perspective, that even if there are foods in this list that I do not eat, there's a concept of what? Having them on the table. Have them on the table, even if I don't eat it. If I don't eat any of these things, there's a concept ultimately of having these symbolic omen foods on the table. Mechzeh. But I think there's also something else. If you take a look at number 16, so very quickly, because we're almost out of time. So we actually just read this in last week's parasha. So the Torah says, Kisatsur el ir yomim rabim lihilachim ala letovsa, lo sashchis es eitzo lindoach ala garzen, kimimenu solcha va'osolo sichros. Actually, you know what? I'm going to skip this for just a moment, just because of time. So with leaving aside the Ramah, because you can make the point, that perhaps these two Gemaras ultimately make reference to these two ideas that we're saying. See, our Gemara, or I should say, the Gemara we just read in number 13 says, what are you supposed to do with the simonim? Mechze. You're supposed to see. So what does it mean, see? It means that the first step of the significant omens is to visualize for yourself a sweet year. Not just a sweet new year, but a sweet entire year. That I believe the year is going to be good. I am filled with unbridled optimism that this is going to be a year of bracha, a year of blessing. It's going to be a year of success. It's going to be a year of wonderful besoros, tovos, good tidings for us as individuals and for Klal Yisrael as a whole. I see it. When I close my eyes, I see a year filled with a beautiful, optimistic, overflowing blessing. That's mechzeh. But having the vision for a sweet new year is not enough. What else do you have to do? Lemechol. It's not enough just to look at the simanim. You have to eat the simanim as well. Because it's the eating of the simanim that represents dynamic life activity. If you want beautiful blessing out of life, it's not just enough to want it. It's not just enough to desire it. It's not just enough to aspire towards it. But rather, a person has to engage in concrete action. How am I going to bring about the blessing in life? How am I going to make it happen for me as an individual? How am I going to make it happen for my family? How am I going to make it happen for my community? How am I going to make it happen for my people? So perhaps the two different Gemaras, again, are referring to the two different aspects of Simna Milsa, of the symbolic foods. Our Gemara that we just quoted over here, number 13, Mechze is the first step. First, have the vision. Believe in your minds, I see a beautiful, sweet new year, but seeing and believing and desiring and pining is not enough. Lemechol, you have to eat it. There has to be dynamic life activity. There has to be a plan for how I'm going to make this new year sweet. But I just want to end off with one more piece because I think that there is another dynamic here, which is that in order to fully activate these simanim, you have to go into Rosh Hashanah with another reality, with another mindset. I spoke about this on Shabbos. If you look at number 19, so we read in this past week's parasha about going out to war. Torah says, "Ki say to the milchama levecha." Torah talks about the idea that when you go out to war, so remember again, there was a kohen who was anointed for a specific job. His job was to go ahead and speak to the troops before they went out to war, and he gave them chizuk, he prepared them. And one of the things he also did was the following. He listed the exemptions from battle. So remember, he said, anyone who built a home but didn't yet live in it, go home. Anyone who planted a vineyard, didn't eat of the fruit of it, go home. Whoever married a woman and did not yet live with her, go home. The idea is that on the battlefield, we don't want the soldier distracted. So we want it to be focused ultimately again on the mission, on the task at hand. So if there's anything that could potentially distract you, you have a patur, you have an exemption, and go back home. And then he says something amazing. Number 19. Then afterwards, what happens? The Kohen says, whoever is afraid, go home, because, you know, fear is contagious. And if one of the soldiers is afraid, then what? Then that fear will ultimately infect you. So if you're afraid, go home. So the Gemara says in number 21, what does it mean, afraid of what? Afraid of what? So the Mishnah, number 21, Masechet Sota says, Rabbi Akiva Omer, middle of the first line, number 21. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Hayori v'rach alivav kimashmo'o, sheni yochal la'amor b'kishem l'chama v'liros cherev shalufa. So Rabbi Akiva says, afraid means? Afraid. Afraid. Not everybody could stand up in battle. He's afraid of the swords, he's afraid of the horses, he's afraid of all this stuff. Okay? So if you're afraid, you are a liability on the battlefield, just go home. But listen to this. The Gemara goes on. Rabbi Yosi Aglidi Omer, Hayor Ivrach Halevav, Zeo HaMesyar Min HaAveros Shebiyado. This refers to someone who is afraid because of the sins he has committed. That I'm afraid that I've sinned, and therefore I'm concerned that when I go out into the battlefield, you know, again, when a person places themselves in a dangerous situation, sometimes, again, there's divine judgment that occurs in that type of circumstance. So I'm concerned if I place myself on the battlefield, I've sinned, I'm afraid I don't have the requisite merit to be able to get out of the battle unscathed. So if I'm afraid that I've sinned, I go home. So the Gemara's intrigued. Like, what kind of sins are we talking about? Right? So I'd have to imagine this is something pretty major. If somebody's so scared they can't go out to battle because they've sinned, it's got to be something. So the Gemara says in number 22, what kind of sin? Soch bein tefila letefila, aveiru hi biyado v'chozer ala me'archa al-mechama. So there are two different interpretations of this statement. So some say that it refers to someone who talks during davening. If you talk during davening, that's a significant davera. Don't come out to battle. Others, Rashi, the dominant explanation is, the halacha is, you know, so a man has an obligation to put on tefillin. Tefillin is comprised of two parts. There's a shalyad, a part you put on the arm, and a shalrosh, part you put on the head. The halacha is that one is not supposed to speak between the shalyad and the shalrosh. So the Gemara says, if you speak between the shalyad and the shalrosh, you should not go out to battle. So first of all, again, certainly speaking in between the shalyad and shalrosh is not good. That's for sure. But out of all the averos the Gemara would have said that you should go back from battle for, I would not have put this on the list. Yet the Gemara does. But there's a bigger problem. What's the bigger problem? Look at number 23. The Gemara says the following. V'amarlem Shema Yisrael. When the Kohen Gadol begins his speech to the soldiers, he begins it with the phrase Shema Yisrael. Hear Israel. Hayom atem krevim mochama. Today you're going out to war. And the Gemara says something amazing. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishra V'Shem Yochai. Amar Alem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Second line number 23. Afila lo kiyamtem ela kriya Shema Shachris V'arvis. I atem nimsarem biyadam. The Gemara says that the Kohen Gadol is telling them, even if all you have in your spiritual storehouse is that you've said Shema in the morning and in the evening, that's enough of a merit. That's enough of a merit to be able to allow you to be successful in a war. So the question now is obvious and glaring, which is, we have a Gemara that tells us that if the soldier spoke between the Shalyad and the Shalrosh, spoke during davening, you shouldn't go out to war, which sounds like even from relatively minor infractions, one should not go out to war. And yet another Gemara that tells me that even if all I have in my spiritual storehouse that I said Shema, be confident in God. So which one is it? And number 25, and I'll tell you this outside just because of time. The Kotzk, Menachem Mendel of Kotzk, gives a magnificent interpretation. He says, just look at the first three lines. Obei Rav HaKadosh Mikotzk, ki yisod hanitzrach la'atzlacha v'nitzachem ha'mochama, hi sheyigash ala barav o'os satsumos. The Kotzk says, in order to be successful in battle, what's the most important thing you need? You need confidence. You have to believe in yourself. And so the Kotzker is saying that in life there are two, the Gemara is describing two different types of people. If you take a look back at number 21, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yosef Aglili says, that who is the person, who is the Arvarach Leivav? Zeh HaMestiari Min HaAveros, last line number 21, Shebiyodo. Rabbi Yosef Aglili says, who is the person who shouldn't go out to war? It's the person who's concerned not about just his sins, but averos shabiyado. What does it mean, shabiyado? in his hands. There are some people that when they fail, they obsess over their failures. There are some people that can never let go of their mistakes. People think that it's a source of piety to go ahead and constantly beat yourself up over your mistakes. It's not piety, or maybe it's misguided piety. We all make mistakes. But part of rehabilitating myself is letting go of my mistakes. Because if my averos are biyado, if I'm always holding them in my hand, I can never get past them. And if I can't get past them, I can never see the good in myself. And if I can never see the good in myself, then I can never build on that good to become even better. Because if you define yourself by your mistakes in life, you're not going anywhere. Because if I define myself by my mistakes, then I'm a bad person. And if I'm a bad person, there's no chomer, there's no building blocks with which to grow. Therefore, says the Kusker, the Gemara is describing two different types of people. The first type of person is someone, Avero Shebiyado. He's always holding on to his sins. He defines himself constantly by his failures. Such a person, don't go out to war, please. Stay home. You'll do something on the home front to support the war effort. Don't come out to battle because you don't have the confidence to be successful in life. Every single soldier always has to be confident that someone they're going to be successful. If you don't believe in yourself, you don't see the good in yourself, then by definition you can't be successful in battle. But there's another type of person. Another type of person says, you know what? I know I have many faults. I know I have many shortcomings. But you know what? I say Shema in the morning and in the evening. There's another type of person that says, I'm not going to ignore my faults. I'm not going to ignore my shortcomings, but I'll tell you what I'm going to focus on. Let me first focus a little bit on what I do right. Because if I know that I do A, B, C, D, and E right, that means I have the capacity for good. And if I have the capacity for good, that means there is a foundation. And if there is a foundation, then I have the ability to build on that. That's the kind of person, says the Gemara, that should go out to war. An army doesn't need perfect soldiers, and the Ribono Shel Olam doesn't need perfect followers. What he needs are people who are confident in themselves, and this is exceptionally important, because part of our avoda for Elul, and part of our avoda ultimately for the Yom Noraim, is not to beat ourselves up over our mistakes. We have to own our mistakes. We have to acknowledge our mistakes. We have to apologize for our mistakes, and we have to and we also at the same time concurrently have to recognize and see all of the good we possess. Because if I focus on my good and I realize how special I am and look at everything that I've accomplished. So yes, I should have accomplished more and I like to accomplish more. But you know I could accomplish more next year? Because look at what I accomplished this year. And I think this all ties together. Because in order to show up at the Rosh Hashanah table and be able to fully fulfill what Chazal intended with the Siman, in order to show up at the Rosh Hashanah table and to believe that A, this year is going to be beautiful and magnificent, and to believe that B, I can create a plan and engage in dynamic activity to make life beautiful and magnificent, the precursor to all of that is belief in myself. I have to show up at the Rosh Hashanah table believing that I'm worthy of another year. I have to show up at the Rosh Hashanah table believing that I could accomplish something great. I have to show up at Rosh Hashanah believing that yes, I've done many, many, many things wrong. I own them, I accept responsibility for them, and I'm creating a plan to address them. But I've also done many things right. And because of that, that shows me that I have the ability to build upon that foundation and make something beautiful. So we should be Zochem Yeretz Hashem. And it's only 2.5 weeks to Rosh Hashanah. There's still time to unlock the power of Elul, to unlock the power of Yemei Adin. By the way, I didn't say that to make anyone nervous. Right? I'm saying that as Baruch Hashem, we have another 2 weeks. So even if for some reason I haven't gotten to work yet, there's still plenty of time. We should be Zochem Yeretz Hashem to believe in ourselves, to believe in our good, to focus on our good. We should be Zochem Yeretz Hashem to believe that the coming year is going to be beautiful, and we should have enough wisdom to be able to create the right plan to unlock the beauty and holiness of the coming year.